All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are Locked On Falcons, and I am your host, Aaron Freeman, today, once again, joined by my friend, Mark Schofield, and we are going to do a very deep dive on Falcons' new third-round quarterback, Desmond Ridder.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP. Still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And like all Locked On Sports Atlanta podcasts, you can find Locked On Falcons free and available Monday through Friday on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify. And of course, you can also find the video version of the podcast on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel, and you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So I am here joined once again by Mark Schofield, my sort of in-house Locked On Falcons QB guru. You know, whenever Mark and Matt Waldman get together on Matt doing the rookie scouting stuff on YouTube, is always must watch for the quarterbacks. I remember going back, you know, I guess this is almost 3 years ago when you guys were doing Trey Lance, like the summer before anybody had ever even heard of this Trey Lance guy. But we've already talked with Mark a couple of times already this offseason about this most recent quarterback class. And in those episodes, we did touch upon Desmond Ridder and sort of his scheme fit and why he makes a lot of sense for the Falcons, his ability as a high level processor and having a high floor and all that various stuff. And today we're going to be going in deeper on sort of the mental makeup and the intangibles that make people like Desmond Ridder, and whether that's going to help or, you know, I can't imagine it hurting him, but, you know, how important that is going to be as he transitions to the NFL. But without further ado, I'll stop talking. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Aaron, nobody wants to hear from me. They'd rather hear from you, buddy.
I don't know. You might want to check the YouTube comments on this video. And they're like, well, man, Aaron needs to shut up about this. Get the guest on.
I checked the YouTube comments on my own videos. And they're like, man, Mark needs to shut up. So I get it.
Yeah, it's all about the guests on each other's shows. They'll love me on your show. They'll love you on my show. But
there we go.
You know, we've talked before about Desmond Ridder's processing and sort of having that high floor. And that was a big part of why, you know, certain people value Desmond Ridder as QB1 in this draft class, that he seems to be the guy that's best at processing, reading the field, analyzing the game, playing from the neck up, so to speak, than necessarily some of these other guys in this draft class that play a little bit more from the neck down. I guess, you know, with the situation here in Atlanta where he has Marcus Mariota ahead of him, and there's kind of this expectation, and certainly I've been talking about a lot on Locked On Falcons these last couple of weeks, that at some point in time they're going to get Desmond Ridder on the field to sort of see what he can do. The just question of is when that point in the season is going to be. And I guess my question to you, Mark, is, do you feel like Desmond Ridder is ready to come and play right away in the NFL?
I do, Aaron. I do. I think he and Kenny Pickett are the two quarterbacks of this draft cycle where I felt if a team drafted them with the hope that whatever rookie they picked needed to see the field this season, those were the two guys I feel most comfortable doing it. They're both experienced passers. And like you said, particularly with Ridder, certainly you see that mental component to the game and, you know, things that he does extremely well in terms of reading out safety rotations. His game against Houston in the conference championship game, I think, is a great example, a great study for that. Houston in that game did a lot with spinning their safeties at the snap, 2 high to 1, 1 to 2. And he did a very good job in those moments of sort of resetting his expectations pre-snap versus post-snap and getting to the right read. He had some big throws to Alec Pierce in that game when they went from 2 high to 1, and he found that singled up matchup on the outside to take advantage of the rotation. He's also very good in sort of full field progressions, you know, working 1, 2, 3, get into the backside dig, which was a huge topic of conversation among sort of film Twitter last season with the Rams and their ability to get Matthew Stafford to that backside dig and take advantage when the front side concept was taken away by the defensive coverage. And so those are things you need to see from an NFL quarterback in today's NFL. And he's doing them at a very high level at the college game. So that will translate. Also, look, I know they lost to Alabama in the playoffs, but you watch that game. he did pretty much everything you wanted a quarterback to do against an Alabama defense, you know, playing against the Nick Saban coverage, playing against some of these better defenses, you know, the Kirby Smart defenses and certainly Georgia, what they did last year for some other quarterbacks that were tested by that defense. That's as close as you can get to what you're going to see on an NFL Sunday. And Ridder's going through reads, going through progressions, getting the ball out quickly. He had, you know, a great play where he hit Scott early in the game, sort of a hitch type concept where ball's out on time, in rhythm, you know, putting the football where it needs to be, taking what the defense is giving them, and then putting his receivers in position to be successful after the play. So in terms of guys that were ready to go, I think Ridder and Pickett as well are the two guys that, look, if you're telling me there's going to be rookies from this class starting week one, I imagine Ridder and Pickett would be the two that I would be most comfortable with seeing the field that early. Now, whether Atlanta goes that route or if it's more mid-season, late season, that obviously remains to be seen. But if he has to see the field early, even very early as a rookie, I think he's ready to go.
Now, we're talking about Ridder, you know, potentially having the mental makeup, the intangibles, the drive to play early on for the Falcons this year. And I know a lot of people aren't necessarily expecting a whole lot from the Falcons this season, and it may be a fairly rough one for whoever is the Falcons' starting quarterback. You know, obviously, we don't have necessarily as much in-depth knowledge of the person and that Desmond Ridder is, but from what you have gleaned from him, do you feel like he has that sort of intangible ability to sort of endure the adversity that he may potentially face right away in the NFL? And I guess given your background of playing quarterback position, how important is sort of those intangibles, that neck up ability, that mental makeup sort of thing to playing the position at the next level?
I mean, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. That ability to stay composed, that ability to sort of rebound from adversity, rebound from mistakes. I mean, I see it in the kids that I coach. I mean, you know, quarterbacks throw interceptions. So the good ones find a way to bounce back. The bad ones, it turns into quicksand. And, you know, one mistake becomes three, becomes four, becomes five. But the good ones find a way to shrug that stuff off. And, you know, you mentioned that Alabama game, and there were certainly moments where he was tested, and he seemed to battle through that well. You know, you look back through his career, and he's had that ability to shrug off mistakes, shrug off interceptions, and sort of go after it the next drive. And while he's learning from mistakes and he's applying the knowledge from those mistakes, he's not letting it pull him down into those quicksand moments where one interception becomes four, five, six. He's been very conservative with the football over his entire career at Cincinnati in terms of not making mistakes. You know, nine interceptions last year, not a whopping amount of interceptions, not a situation where you had some quarterbacks that have come out, they've got 12, 14, 16, 18 interceptions in a season. It's like, now it's worrisome. Ridder much more careful with the football, but when he does make mistakes, he's shown that ability to sort of bounce back from those moments, learn from what he did, but also not let it sink him. And so if this is a situation where he plays early and we're talking about a team that finishes, you know, 4-13, you know, 7-10, whatever the record is, it doesn't seem like it's the kind of situation that's going to sort of spiral out of control for him. But that makeup, you know, that mental composure, that ability to stay composed, it's critical for a quarterback, because if you start playing looking over your shoulder, you're going to lose your job. If you're more worried about, you know, losing your job, you're not going to make the kind of throws that you need to keep your job. And that's something I know from personal experience. But in watching Ridder over the past couple of years, I think if he's tested in terms of adversity, whether it's record or mistakes and things like that, he's got the ability to sort of work through those moments and fight through those moments, which you need to as a quarterback.
Now, you mentioned Desmond Ridder maybe being a little bit conservative with the football, and we'll continue this conversation here with Mark Schofield talking about whether or not that game manager label is a fair, is that a boon to Desmond Ridder as a prospect, or is that a knock on him as a prospect? We'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons, guys. But before we get there, let me plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, where you can find three different shows on the same podcast feed on all the same podcast platforms that you watch or listen to Locked On Falcons. You got A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanifa Batiste. And if you subscribe to Locked On Sports Atlanta on YouTube, you can also get the Atlanta Braves postcast, where Locked On Braves breaks down each and every Braves game. So subscribe to Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast feed. And guys, I also want to tell you that today's episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by Rock Auto. With ever increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why wait while the person behind the counter orders parts on their computer when you already have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home or in your pocket? Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Instead of spending up to twice as much for the same parts from chain store or car dealership, Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years with reliably low prices for every single customer. They have everything you need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Just go to rockauto.com, browse their easy-to-use website, and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So here with Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire, and we're talking about Desmond Ridder being kind of a game manager. Mark, you kind of mentioned it. A guy doesn't make a ton of mistakes in his game. And sort of when I did my initial pass on the film, you know, there were a couple of instances out there that stood out to me where it was like a 3rd and 10 and he would sort of settle for a 6-yard pass. And immediately, you know, I would sort of think, oh, that's kind of like Alex Smith. And I was kind of thinking that that led me to not basically loving Desmond Ridder above some of these other quarterbacks in this draft class. And it felt like, you know, he's not going to make the mistakes, which, you know, is a good thing. But at the same time, is he going to push to make some of those throws in some of these bigger moments, you know, like you kind of expect some of these quarterbacks to do at the collegiate level? And he would just kind of settle and be like, I'll get him next time. Did you see that when you watched the film of Desmond Ridder? Was he at times a little too conservative, or do you feel like he was the right amount of conservative?
I mean, he probably leaned more towards the conservative side of the ledger than the aggressive side of the ledger. And I think that's a fair sort of way to put it for him. There were certainly moments that I saw, much like you did, where, you know, it's a 3rd and 10, it's a 3rd and long situation. You might think, you know, maybe you want to squeeze this throw in, maybe you want to, you know, challenge that window and try to make sure you get the first down. But it seemed like, look, he was willing last year and in years prior, really, to just sort of, look, if this is the best option, if this is the safest throw for me, and, you know, if we've got like a vertical, a dig, and then something underneath, and I don't feel comfortable about those deeper routes, I'll take that underneath. Maybe we break something after the catch. Maybe we break a tackle to it. If not, we've got a good defense to rely on. You know, I've got to sort of manage this game and sort of take control of this offense the best that I can. And if the best option on a given play might be thrown short of the sticks and hoping something breaks, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I tend to sort of appreciate the more aggressive passers, the guys that are willing to challenge those windows from an evaluation standpoint. But from a coaching standpoint, you kind of like the guy that's going to take what the defense is going to give him, not put you behind the sticks or put you with, you're got a short field situation now because that pass that he's attempted downfield gets intercepted. And so you can see both sides to that from a coaching standpoint versus an evaluation standpoint. And so I think ultimately when you watch him, when you study him, you see, you know, it tends to be a little bit more conservative. You know, I think 205 of his 385 passing attempts were in that 0 to 10 range. That's where the NFL is played right now. You know, most throws are coming into that area of the field to begin with. You know, now the question becomes, can you get him into an offense, into a system of talent around him that can turn those 8-yard throws, 2 yards short of the sticks on 3rd and 10 into first downs? You know, and some of that also has to come from him. If he's going to be a more conservative quarterback, if he's going to take those underneath throws, then it's paramount that quick throws, quick decisions, good ball placement that gives those receivers a chance to turn that 8-yard throw into a 15-yard gain. Because you could be successful, you can generate yardage after the catch, and you can create those first downs throwing short of the sticks, provided you're putting the football where it needs to be when it needs to be there. If he's thrown short of the sticks, but the passes are off target, so guys have to sort of adjust and then can't maintain speed into and out of the catch point, that's going to be a problem. Does he end up like Mitchell Trubisky in a sense where Trubisky was in an offense designed to maximize yardage after the catch, but he was late with reads and decisions and poor with ball placement, so 8-yard throws were 8-yard gains? Or is he like some other quarterbacks that we've seen in offenses that rely on yardage after the catch, where the ball placement is such that you're turning that, you know, 9-yard throw into a 16-yard gain? Guys like Burrow, guys like Brady, you know, that have that ability. So that's going to be the balancing act with him. If he's going to stay this sort of conservative, you know, within himself, within the structure of the offense type of quarterback. If the ball placement and timing are where they need to be, you could still be very successful as an offense, even with that kind of mentality at QB.
Yeah. And to be fair, you know, I think Matt Ryan could have been labeled similarly.
Yeah.
Being exactly conservative, and it didn't really hurt his career. And I think you bring up an interesting point with, you know, I think playing at Cincinnati allowed him to know that, like, he could, you know, wait for the next series. I'll get him next time because I know my defense is good. We have, you know, a really good football team. And so I don't necessarily have to try to put the team on my back and win the game. And I'm curious, you know, obviously we'll sort of see how it goes this year. But, you know, at least outside the state of Georgia, not a lot of people expect a lot from the Falcons. And I wonder if that approach is going to be detrimental to him in Atlanta if he doesn't necessarily have all the playmakers, at least right now, that can play that style of football. And it's going to be interesting because, like, I look around the league and I see other quarterbacks that it felt like, okay, they're being probably a little too conservative early in their career, and that's kind of held them back. And, like, you know, it's the idea, I think a lot of coaches say, I would rather be forced to have to rein somebody in than necessarily try to get them to go that extra mile. And I guess I'm just curious, where do you sort of stand on that issue? Do you think that could be a pro or a con for the Falcons specific situation?
Yeah. I mean, Aaron, I certainly tend to agree that it's a lot easier to get somebody to be more aggressive than it is. I mean, it's a lot easier to get somebody to sort of tamp it down than it is to get somebody to be more aggressive. Like, if somebody's gotten to this point in their career and they've been more conservative, I mean, I think Alex Smith is a prime example. It's hard to get them to dial it up, to start thinking, hey, you know, you can trust yourself, trust the team. You can hit this throw. If they've gotten to this point in this career, whether they're an NFL quarterback, they've been drafted first, second, third, whatever, and they've been conservative in the past, it's much harder to then learn, like, I can be aggressive. It's much easier, I think, both from watching the position, from playing the position, from coaching the position, to get somebody to sort of look, you know, it's great that you can do that. You don't have to do it all the time. Sometimes you can check it down. Sometimes you can take a check down. It's easier to get somebody to sort of rein it in than it is just to get somebody at this point in their career to suddenly start being aggressive. And I think the Alex Smith comparison is very apt there. And another example to sort of keep in mind is Patrick Mahomes at the start of last year. You know, as we start thinking about what this Atlanta team might look like next year and what it might be like for Ridder if he's forced to play, you know, that was a defense early in the year that was struggling. Mahomes felt like he had to get a home run on every drive. He had to finish drives with touchdowns, and he was starting to force throws, and you saw tips and interceptions and missed opportunities as a result. And that's that sort of quicksand scenario where you feel as a quarterback you have to finish every drive with a touchdown because you don't trust your defense. Mistakes can result from that. And so that's going to also be part of the balancing act. If this Atlanta team struggles, like you said, many expect them to, does Ridder, if he's on the field, or if it's Mariota, whoever's under center, do they feel like they have to finish drives with touchdowns? Do they start taking more chances? Now, maybe in an odd way that helps Ridder. You know, if we're wondering about him becoming more aggressive and taking more chances, maybe if he feels like, look, I've got to throw ourselves back into games, I've got to take more chances, in a weird way, in an almost backwards way, that works for his development. If it's a situation where they're down, you know, 24-0 in the first quarter and he's still throwing check down after check down, then maybe that doesn't happen. But it's going to be interesting to watch, I think, Aaron, if they are, you know, behind on the scoreboard in games and he starts being a little bit more aggressive. Maybe the wins and losses don't translate, but it might ultimately be better for his development long term.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we will continue today's episode, wrapping up here with Mark Schofield, talking a little bit more about sort of, you know, to maximize Desmond Ridder's development, what type of roster, what type of offense the Falcons should be looking to build around him. And we'll pick Mark's brain on that as we continue today's episode, guys. But before we get there, I want to plug the Locked On Sports Today podcast, hosted by Peter Bukowski, is giving you all that great coverage of not just football, but basketball, horse racing, college sports, boxing, UFC. Locked On Sports Today is giving you all the best headlines of every single sports league around the world, each and every day for 20 minutes each day. So find Locked On Sports Today hosted by Peter Bukowski on your preferred podcast platform, including all the ones that you check out, Locked On Falcons. And guys, it is summertime and we're all looking to get those beach bodies. So we want to get a little bit more protein and cut back on our calories, or maybe you're going to go on a family vacation and you'll be hiking and you want to put something, you know, in your backpack that you can sort of quickly snack on, that doesn't feel, make you feel guilty. And of course, the best option for you is Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar, but they're better than candy bars because not only do Built Bars taste good, they're good for you. They're low in sugar, low in calories, low in carbs, high in protein, high in fiber. They've just unveiled their brownie batter puff flavor. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I know when I was a kid and my mom would make brownies, I would love licking the bowl. And you're sort of getting that same thing with that sort of fluffy marshmallowy flavor that comes from the puffs. And, you know, now that you're an adult, you know, people frown upon you licking the bowl and whatnot. And so now you don't have to feel guilty about getting that same, you know, hit of nostalgia and that same great flavor by ordering yourself a box of the brownie batter puff by going to built.com. And when you do use the promo code LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, for 15% off at built.com. So here with Mark Schofield, Touchdown Wire at USA Today, and we're talking about Desmond Ridder, and we've already talked about sort of Desmond Ridder and the mental makeup of sort of how he's going to have to deal potentially with some adversity coming into the league, not just for playing for the Falcons, but just in general playing in the NFL. Also, whether or not that game manager label that he's kind of stuck with, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Now, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, piggybacking off of what you said, Mark, talking about that game manager stuff, where there's going to be situations where, you know, he settles for the 6-yard check down on a 3rd and 8 or whatever the case may be. And you need guys in those situations that can make plays. And I guess when you evaluated Desmond Ridder, what type of offense did you imagine and what type of personnel did you imagine sort of be like, this would be perfect situation for Desmond Ridder? And, you know, when you look at the Falcons, particularly their weapons and their running game and their offensive line, do you feel like they check some of those boxes?
I do feel like they check some of those boxes, Aaron. I mean, when you're watching Ridder and, you know, for my money, the sort of scheme fit component to all of this is the most fascinating, the most interesting, and sometimes sort of the toughest to figure out. You know, but when I was sort of watching him, I felt like his combination of athleticism, ability to throw on the move, and ability to work through concepts from the mental perspective, I definitely sort of feel like that McVay, Shanahan, LaFleur, like coach and tree, that kind of offensive system where there's a reliance on outside zone, wide zone concepts, getting the quarterback on the move, giving him some multi-layered route concepts to choose from in the passing game, you know, giving him the opportunity to do some things with his legs is kind of the ideal fit for him. Now, I think he's very much a scheme diverse quarterback. Like, you could drop him into more of an air raid type of system. You could drop him into more of your traditional drop back multi-level concept system. You could drop him into, you know, I think he could run a vertical based passing game because he has the arm strength and the arm talent to do it. I think he's pretty scheme diverse, but that's the kind of system where I think he fits best. And I think, look, I wrote a piece right after the draft at Touchdown Wire about, you know, why Arthur Smith sort of made him the pick and what he sort of saw in him. And I think the decision-making is certainly part of it, but I do think that there's an athletic component to his game that I would imagine they're going to rely on. I think, you know, with what Smith did with Tannehill, using his athleticism, obviously the acquisition of Marcus Mariota, now you're drafting Ridder, who ran the 4.52 and was used a lot with his legs at Cincinnati. I think you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see the quarterback on the move. You're going to see, you know, those boot concepts working off of outside and wide zone where you're trying to give the quarterback that quick throw, but you've also got that 3-level read for him to read out as he rolls out, as he moves the pocket a little bit. I think that's going to be a very good fit for him. I'm very curious how they use Patterson in the year ahead. I think the London acquisition is also a nod towards that, because one of the things that I liked about London when you are studying him for the draft cycle was his ability to separate. You know, people look at him and they think, oh, he's just a big body contested catch receiver. But I think even against press-aligned defenders, he showed you an ability to separate early in the down, which I think is going to be very helpful for Ridder or for Mariota, you know, given what Atlanta is going to be trying to do next year. And that ability to separate obviously plays into the yardage you can get as a receiver after the catch. If you're constantly in contested catch situations, it's going to be tougher for that. But if you can separate early in the down of the ball, gets there early in the play, that's going to give you a window to turn in those 6-yard throws into 10-yard gains. And so I think conceptually, Aaron, that's the kind of offense I would imagine them running. Those are the kinds of things I would imagine them doing with him. You know, whether I'm right or not remains to be seen, but I think that's probably where they're headed given some of the acquisitions and given some of the moves that they've made so far.
Yeah, I think that's fair. One of the things I've heard a lot of people say, and I haven't necessarily confirmed this because I want to give another look at the film with Desmond Ridder, which I'll be starting up this week. But, you know, I know a lot of people talked about, you know, that connection that Desmond Ridder had with Alec Pierce on some of those like go balls and fades and whatnot and being very effective on that. And then you sort of look at a player like Drake London, you look at a player like Kyle Pitts. Do you feel like that's something that Ridder is maybe more unique compared to some of the other quarterbacks in being able to rely on, you know, sort of those bigger bodied wide receivers down the football field?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at Pierce, and what's interesting about Pierce and Ridder and their connection is a lot of that stuff was stuff that was converted either at the line or in the moment after the snap. You know, I got a chance to talk to Alec Pierce for a show I did before the draft, and he talked about how a lot of their routes and a lot of the stuff that he was specifically asked to do in that Cincinnati offense was predicated upon coverage. It was predicated upon if he saw press or not at the line of scrimmage, routes converting, you know, pre-snap, post-snap, and things like that. And there's an inherent need for the quarterback to read that stuff out and read it the same way that the receiver does. It's one thing if the quarterback reads it, but you need both guys to be on the same page together. But the two of them certainly had that connection. And then look, Pierce and his catch radius seems to mesh really well with not just what Pitts does, but also with Drake London, two other players that have that big sort of catch radius. And in a way, that might also be a very intriguing window into how this organization evaluated Ridder, because we all know one of the questions on him was sort of ball placement. You know, he certainly improved in that area from, you know, his 2 years ago to last year. Now, a lot of people say it's mostly early in the game, but when you're talking about guys with big catch radiuses, they can certainly help a receiver out. I mean, help a quarterback out, excuse me, you know, throw slightly off target. Guys like Pitts and London have the ability, have shown that ability both at the college and pro level to be able to get to that. You know, and if you're going to rely on Ridder and you're worried that, you know, maybe it's going to take another year for that ball placement to get precisely where it needs to be, having guys like Pitts and London will be huge. And so whether it's the mental component with the connection with those guys or just what the receivers are helping the quarterback at the catch point with, having London and Pitts is going to be huge for Ridder next season.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, I really do appreciate you joining me once again talking more about this quarterback class. I have a suspicion that if things don't go quite the way that the Falcons want them to go, we'll be talking probably in the fall about next year's
quarterback. CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Grayson McCall.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully we'll delay that. Hopefully that's usually a good sign that the Falcons are doing some good things, that we won't be having that conversation by the end of September. But Mark, go ahead and let the listeners know and the viewers know where they can find your stuff.
Well, Aaron, thanks as always for having me. I always kind of joke around that, like, I'm kind of the harbinger of doom for team podcasts. Like, if you're having me on in October and September, November, it's probably not because things are going well. So hopefully, Aaron, you guys won't need to see me for a while because Atlanta's doing well, or at least Ridder's looking like the guy. But if you need me, you know where to find me, at Mark Schofield on Twitter, USA Today's Touchdown Wire. But Aaron, buddy, thanks for having me on. Always a blast, my friend.
Absolutely. So, guys, that will do it for us here with Mark Schofield. Till then. All right, guys, don't touch that dial quite yet. We're not done here. I want to thank Mark Schofield for joining me and talking with me about Desmond Ridder. I'll be linking to his article about Desmond Ridder, how he fits in Arthur Smith's scheme, in the description below. And I'll use this conversation I had with Mark sort of as the precursor for when I do my final film pass of Desmond Ridder, which I'm probably starting as most of you are listening to this. And hopefully that'll be done this weekend. And that will culminate with a scouting report on Desmond Ridder Sunday evening on YouTube and Monday morning on your preferred podcast platform. But speaking of doing scouting reports, tomorrow's episode will be about Troy Andersen and talking about how, you know, he's a project and we'll see if this coaching staff can develop that project. So that's on deck for tomorrow's episode. Then on Thursday, episode Wednesday night on YouTube. We'll be joined by Jarvis Davis of ATL Day One's podcast. We're going to be talking about probably Deion Jones on that episode. And of course, you guys can provide your feedback on anything that was discussed on today's episode, anything you want to be discussed on future episodes, by sending an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. You can leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube, or of course, you can hit me up on social media, either Locked On Falcons on Facebook or on Twitter. So guys, that's going to do it for us now. Appreciate it. Till then.